for June 6th, 2007. It's the Lullabot Podcast. So I tried a different way of saying it's the Lullabot Podcast on the last one, and I wasn't really successful.
It didn't go so well.
I wasn't really successful with a new style, so I'm just going to go with the old style, be my thing. It's the Lullabot Podcast. Number 41, episode 41. Episode 40 was a huge hit. We got on the homepage of Dig. And, I don't know, it was downloaded like 40,000 times or something ridiculous like that. So, I hope, you know, maybe we gained some listeners. Maybe some people are listening to this one, you know, maybe expecting it to be as good as that one. I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, those are some big shoes to fill, you know?
Well, yeah. So, Anyways, it's the Lullabot Drupal Podcast. We get together every week and talk about Drupal in podcast format. I'm Jeff Robbins, and I'm here with...
Angie Byrne.
And also...
Nathan Howe.
Angie and Nate. It's the Jeff and Angie and Nate Show. Wee-hee!
Are you okay, Jeff? Did you get into the silly sauce?
I'm very silly. Yeah. So we're gonna, our big news, the big news is, we have a new lullabot.com that launched, a couple days ago. And, if you go to lullabot.com, you know, the website, you can, see the new site. It's still Drupal. It's still Drupal 5. We were Drupal 5, as of a couple months ago. But we have, you know, buffed it up a little bit, polished it around the edges, got a new theme, got a little bit of new functionality. I don't know. We're excited. I thought we'd do a podcast and talk a little bit about sort of how that process of sort of updating and upgrading and converting a site, a pre-existing site, works, and kind of what goes into that and that kind of thing. Does that sound good with you guys?
Yeah, it sounds good.
Sure.
Or were you talking to the audience?
No. We're speaking on behalf of all of the listeners.
No, that's 40,000 people, dude. I wouldn't be able to understand what they're all saying.
I think it was even as high as like 70,000 for the end there, wasn't it?
Really?
It was crazy. Oh. Yeah, it's nuts.
I got to go look at those numbers. That's craziness. But let's, you know, get caught up with a little Drupal news, a little what's going on in the land of Drupal. The code freeze June 1st did not happen.
Nope. Which is great.
You know, it is actually. Why didn't it happen?
Well, I think, that to some extent the changes were a little bit hampered by head being broken for so long because of the menu patch and stuff like that. But now it's great because there's a lot of, sort of momentum going behind the efforts, and so I guess Dries just kind of wanted to see those continue to flourish. So we got another month extension. So now the code freeze won't happen until July 1st.
So for those people that don't know, what is a code freeze, and what are we talking about? So this is the code freeze for Drupal 6, the next version of Drupal. What's a code freeze?
Well, a code freeze means, every time that we have a new version of Drupal in development, there's a period where, you know, head, we call, quote-unquote, the development version, is kind of available for anybody to try and squeeze in whatever crazy features that they have, you know. So, like, for example, you know, we're trying to get OpenID into core, and we're trying to get update status module into core and stuff like that. But at some point we have to wind down the crazy development pace, and we have to say, okay, now let's focus on making it stable, fixing bugs and stuff like that. And that's a code freeze, which means no more features. Now we're just focusing on stability.
Right. No more new features, no more technically new code. It's now all fixes to the existing code and fixing to the bugs and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and usability improvements and performance improvements, stuff like that.
Cool. So that's what code freeze is. And the reason that the code freeze got postponed was because there's been so much really cool development that's been happening. One of the things that has gotten people excited about the new development that's happening is this new patch spotlight section of Drupal.org. Do you want to talk about that, Angie?
Yeah, sure. So the patch spotlight, it was an initiative started, I think, by like Derek and Earl Miles and or Derek Wright, Earl Miles, and Addison. Anyway, a bunch of people kind of were like, you know, there's so many cool things going on in head. How do we keep track of like where we should like focus our efforts if we're testers and we don't necessarily do development, but we really want to help, you know, push head further along and make sure that Drupal 6 is awesome, you know? So they came up with this concept called the patch spotlight, which basically highlights one patch and says, you know, if you're interested in testing something, here's a good patch to test. And some patches that have been featured there before were like, for example, the schema API patch, which redid the whole way that, you know, database creation's done so that we can more easily port Drupal to other, you know, database systems. Like there's an Oracle port in the works and stuff like that. The new file system that, you know, ties, you know, files to users as opposed to nodes. So you no longer have this, you know, weird thing where you, in order to delete a file, you have to, you know, you can't share files between nodes. And, you know, there's all these problems on previews and stuff like that. That was fixed. And so far, every single patch that's been featured in the patch spotlight has gotten into core, which is cool. But with this 4-week extension, what we've done is we worked with the core committers to kind of come up with a short list of, like, really great patches that we would love to see in core. So if you go to drupal.org/patch/spotlight. I'm physically incapable of saying that without saying splashlight or
seems,
something.
It seems to make so much sense when written on the screen, yet it's really virtually does. Impossible to say it. drupal.org/patch/spotlight. Yes,
that. We should have people make little MIDI files on themselves trying to say it. But anyway, so if you go there, there's a list of various like internationalization patches, kind of cool new features patches, menu and form system patches and stuff to kind of show you some of the improvements, not all by any means, but some of the ones that the core committers anyway want to see fast-tracked into Drupal 6. So there's a great place to go. there's a great place to go and figure out. There's instructions there on how you get started testing patches and how to do reviews properly. And it's a great way to get involved with Drupal.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of barrier to entry. It's just, you know, you set up an environment and you're ready to go, and people will love you for it because testing patches is one of those things that it's really hard to find people who do that.
Yeah. If you wanted to find a way to sort of start to really get involved in the Drupal, particularly the Drupal core development community, this is a great way, and it's good to just sort of rally people around things because there's so oftentimes such a cacophony in any open source project that it's sort of hard to tell what you should rally behind, and this is a great thing. So drupal.org/patch/spotlight. Say it 10 times fast, win a prize. And yeah, cool. What else? I get, you know, Andrew, we're just going to keep you talking. Nate, we'll have you talk more about the lullabot.com. but Summer of Code is the next, yes, but Summer of Code is the next thing we have on our list of talkabouts. What's going on with that?
Yeah, so Summer of Code officially kicked off May 28th, which is last Monday. And if you go to groups.drupal.org/SOC-2007, much easier to say. If you go there, you can see kind of status updates from all the students who are doing their projects and what they're working on, and you can give feedback to them and stuff like that. And students, if you're listening to this and you've not been posting status reports weekly to the board, please do that. because we need to know what you're working on. And for people, it really helps you guys stay, you know, involved in the community and for to get good feedback from users early and stuff like that. So.
And for people who are just jumping in, Google sponsors what they call the Summer of Code, where they students sort of apply to do different projects with various different open source projects. Do different area work on different things with different open source projects, and Drupal is last year and this year both one of the leading projects. We have how many people? How many students?
20.
20 students all
which
doing
is crazy.
It is crazy. All doing various projects, and you can find out more about those projects and stuff at the groups.drupal.org/ what was it? SOC.
SOC hyphen 2007.
Okay, SOC.
I just want to point out that like the 20 slots is crazy because I think there's only maybe five projects that got more slots than that, and it's like Apache, you know what I mean? And like KDE, you know what I mean? Like all these really well established, you know, years old projects.
Well,
so
I think
it's a.
I mean, I think Drupal has a really interesting kind of niche because it's both, it's got the whole PHP API thing going on, which makes it sort of back-end PHP developer kind of friendly. And then it's got the front-end thing of being, having a user interface, being a web interface for the various things that it does. And so it's not, it can be especially techie or especially not so techie, which is... Mm-hmm. Really, I think it's really cool. but then of course we've done 40 podcasts. So,
41 now.
41. 41.
If we can get through this one, we'll see.
Let's talk about lullabot.com. So we have a new website. It's got clouds. It's got clouds all over the damn thing. It's got new colors. It's I don't know. Why
it makes you feel good just looking at it.
It's a cup of sunshine for your day.
Yeah. I mean, so I guess the reason that we did a new website was because that the past design was launched before we even really had a company fully going, and we didn't quite know how we were going to use the website and what we were going to use the website for and all that kind of stuff. And we've been around as a company for about a year and a half now, and we have a much better idea of what we're going to do on the website. And for instance, that we might have more than 40 podcasts, and also things like, I think, when we started, we put up a section for articles and blogs and stuff like that, but it was all sort of mashed together, and what we found is that over time we've kind of needed a better showcase for sort of the more thoughtful article kinds of things that we've put up on the site, and that I don't know, I think this site's a sort of a better showcase for that kind of stuff. But but I thought it would be interesting for people to hear a little bit about sort of the process of updating and upgrading a site like we did. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit about that. I mean, first of all, we had already updated the site to Drupal 5, right? That happened several months ago, and Nate, you sort of headed up that project. And I think it was at that time that we moved everything into SVN. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's also correct. That was definitely a good move on our part. Previously we'd been doing kind of your typical FTP up to the server to move everything on there. But we're running into the problem that just about everybody has with FTP is that if you've got more than one person doing it, there's typically more than one copy locally on somebody's computer. And so we're running into problems where you're overwriting other people's stuff. And we've been using SVN on our own projects for a long time, but we... Lullabot.com has been so neglected, we just now got around to putting it all into SVN.
Let's talk a little bit about what SVN is.
Oh, okay. Well, SVN is the abbreviation for subversion. It's a very similar system to CVS, the way that Drupal.org manages all of their modules, in the contrib repository and in the Drupal core repository. And so using SVN, we have an SVN server that sits up someplace. We actually use Unfuddle, unfuddle.com. If you want to go and get a free SVN repository, you can go grab one from there. And then we check out a copy of the SVN repository that is lullabot.com onto our local computer and also onto the server. And when we make a change, one of the 10 developers that has a copy of lullabot.com on the computer, they make the changes locally, commit it to the repository, where it makes sure that no changes are being overwritten. And then on the server, you update your checkout on the server, and that way we can have a whole bunch of developers working on one piece of software all at once, which is lullabot.com in this case.
And using version control for this, I mean, basically every single line of code that we change sort of gets a little note next to it and it gets commented and stuff like that. And so if something gets pushed to the development server or even the live server that breaks something, it's really just a matter of going in and basically reverting back to a previous version and then looking at the lines of code that have changed and figuring out where the problem is. And it makes it easier to point fingers at the people who, hey, you broke it. It was you. Look, there's your code. It broke it. And stuff like that. But it also makes it easier for us to work, with copies on our local computers. And so how that works, is, we do an SVN checkout from the server. And this is the whole, all of Drupal, right? I mean, the whole Drupal repository with all the modules that we have and that we're using on lullabot.com. And we do a database dump from the server, and there are any number of different ways to do that. I think we've pretty much just been using phpMyAdmin, right, and doing a database dump from there to our local computer, and then take that database dump and install it. I use MAMP. Which is Macintosh, Apache, MySQL, PHP, sort of like LAMP, except it runs on the Mac, MAMP, and use that for my stuff, and then install the database into the PHP that comes with MAMP, and I actually check out the all the files into my sites directory. This is on the Macintosh, and I point MAMP at my sites directory as my sort of main, web directory. And then I'm able to, let's say I check it out into the sites directory, into a directory called Lullabot. Then I'm able to just go to localhost/Lullabot, and there I have the whole site, the whole server, you know, everything, basically an exact copy of what's running on our live server that I have locally, and I can go in and start to make changes there and edit things and try out different configurations. But more likely, I'm, you know, actually editing and changing modules and files and stuff like that. So and that's basically what you guys do, the same kind of thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
there's a talking about what you said earlier about you know, figuring out who did what. There's actually a command in SVN called SVN blame, and you can do SVN blame and then a file, and then on each line of the file, it will tell you who was the last person to change that individual line. So I know who to blame for fixing this bug I had to fix earlier this morning.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, the version control stuff, whether it's CVS or SVN, is all sort of really mind-blowing when you start to think about that concept. I just came across a site today. Oh, this site called Ohloh, OHLOH.net, it looks like what it does is it actually goes through the the version control repositories for various open source projects and posts a whole bunch of metrics for those projects. So there's a project in there for Drupal, and you can see all kinds of like crazy stats. Like you can see the number of posts by, you know, the number of commits by every user and stuff like that. And you can see, like over time, it shows like all these graphs and stuff. It's really kind of mind blowing to see it all. It's actually, it's kind of neat. I noticed as I went to, the contributors, the Drupal, contributions is a separate project from the Drupal core. And Angie, you're on there. I think you're number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You're like the 6th or 7th person down with the most contributions to Drupal.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't have a life. So.
I know. I'm on page two. That's. but yeah. Anyways, yes. But I digress. But those are the kinds of things that you can do just with the data from a version control repository. So, yeah. So the hardest thing about about migrating the site, really wasn't the code, because we had, you know, Subversion, and it was really actually just a matter of kind of replacing the live branch with our new development branch. And, the really hard part was all the database changes, right? I mean, like changing menu items and moving them around and all that kind of stuff. So basically, and this is where I would love to see some sort of an improvement in Drupal. I don't know what the solution would be exactly, but I know that there are some people doing some thinking on this, and it's very exciting. But our method was basically I would on the development site that we had set up, I would just go in and, you know, okay, change this menu item to this and move it to here. And then I would go over to my little text document that I had open and say, change that menu item to this menu item and move it here. Rename this taxonomy term to this and, you know, and then take this node type and change it this way and go create this view and export and import and stuff like that. And so it felt a little like lo-fi. It felt like this really wasn't the best solution for this. And I know that there are a lot of companies out there. I know that the work that we've done with MTV UK, they're like rolling out new features and sections of the site you know, whether it's a contest that sort of defines a whole group of pages or, some sort of a, you know, redesign of a certain area. I mean, they're doing this kind of stuff on a weekly basis. And, it really seems like somewhere that could use some improvements.
Yeah. It's tricky. I mean, there's some stuff like views is pretty solid. Like you can export a view and import a view on a different site, and even you can just blow away a view and then re-import it without hurting anything. But it's trickier on stuff that deals with actual content, you know, like taxonomy terms and content types, CCK and stuff like that, because you don't want to blow away content in the process of, you know, migrating changes back and forth and stuff like that.
Right. Yeah. So
one way that we've dealt with that in the past is we've written update hooks, you know, and then just in code itemized all the stuff that we changed. But it's really
in code meaning in SQL code, like
yeah, right.
You actually, you know,
it's like
right.
The barrier to entry is quite high and it's very error prone as well, and you have to test it a bunch and make sure it doesn't blow anything up and stuff
right.
Like that, so.
And that, I mean, that would be yeah. For situations where you needed to roll it out across a whole list of sites or something like that, that's a good solution. But for this, it just seemed easy enough to basically, you know, our process was we shut off the site and then we did the SVN switch out, right? So now our code is new. We turned on the new theme. Now keep in mind that no one else other than us can actually see the site. And then we started in like, you know, four of us on Skype basically saying, I'm going to do this. And we went through that whole list and just switched out all the things and then turned the site back on and went to bed. They make it sound so easy. But Yeah, and CCK, I mean, CCK has the export and import stuff, but if you're basically modifying an existing type, you know, adding fields or something like that, the export and import doesn't really work right? Anyways, I'm really...
Well, yeah, import-export module was cool because it actually mapped all the data, you know, data types and stuff like that. So in theory, it's good, and it's very well documented and stuff like that, but it's just not a tool that most people could use for their site.
But. Right. Yeah, I'd be curious to see some discussion on this. If people have thoughts about it, definitely comment on this podcast and send some pointers off to some stuff, because this, yeah, could be a really, really cool thing, especially for large installations of Drupal where they want to make these sort of database kinds of changes sort of in a sweeping way. I mean, you can do a fair amount of stuff with the macro module that's included with Devel. I experimented with that a little bit. It just didn't really quite do it. Not the same as just having people jump in and do things. Again, seems a little lo-fi. Let's talk a little bit about sort of the technology behind the new site, and sort of what are the new features that we've got, and kind of what's running them. And we can even talk a little bit about the existing features that we're already using. Nate, you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I think, well, the biggest thing, which we did a couple months ago, like you said, was switching over to Drupal 5. The second biggest thing, I think, would probably be just the creation of our new theme. And rather than our old theme, which was sadly a blue marine modified theme, which it kind of carried that look around still in certain places, the new theme instead is one that's based first on the Zen theme and now on the Zen Gen, which you know all about because you wrote it. So I'll kick that back to you, and you can talk about the Zengen a little bit and why we're using it rather than a blue marine or Garland modified.
Okay, let me see if I can. I don't even know if there's a way to explain this one in a nutshell. So the Zen theme was written to be a CSS oriented theme where basically people could modify the theme through CSS, a la CSS Zen Garden. The problem that we found once we actually released this theme was that we couldn't really make updates to it, and people wouldn't actually get those updates because they had modified. We were basically putting out a theme and encouraging people to hack it. And as soon as they'd hacked it, there really wasn't any way for us to kind of sync back up with them as we put out new updates and changes to it. So I got the concept of actually turning it into a theme engine where basically people could build, you know, sub-themes that were actually themes. And so that became the Zengen. and that's... we sort of rallied some support around that, and I just sort of been experimenting with it. Now, the thing is that the things that make the Zengen need to exist, basically, you know, the way that Drupal sub themes work in Drupal 5 is changing in Drupal 6, and so the Zengen will be made, fingers crossed, and it seems weird to keep fingers crossed about something becoming obsolete, but the Zengen will become obsolete with Drupal 6, and it will just, the code will get merged back into just the Zen theme, and there will be these sub-themes of Zen that will basically exactly work the same way as Zengen themes. Does that make any sense to anyone? I knew going into it was good. Anyways, the whole concept is basically having a theme engine that you can create entire themes that are just CSS files.
Right.
Or, you know, and in order to do that, it uses .info files, which is what's going into Drupal 6 and stuff like that. And it's also got a whole lot of extra variables and a whole lot of extra classes on the sort of default page templates and node templates and stuff like that, above and beyond what PHP template normally does. So, So I guess I, to some extent, I was using it just sort of as a proof of concept, you know, see if it could be done. And there actually were some improvements that were made to Zengen based on this project. This was sort of the first big important project that I'd used Zengine on, and I have yet to commit those back in. I'll probably do this in the next couple of days. But yeah, it's all based on that, and basically there's separate CSS files for the page layout and for all the colors of the site are all in one colors.css file, and there's some fancy print styles so that if you go to pretty much any page on the site, but particularly like an article, and go to print that out, it's prints out nice and pretty, kind of more book style than web page style, and stuff like that. And most of that stuff, most of that stuff comes out of the Zengine.
That's great. We had a lot of requests for print style on our articles, and so good to see that come to realization.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, another area of the site that kind of got a little bit of focus is our work section. I mean, people always want to come, kind of, okay, sure, you got a pretty website, but what have you done? And so we our work page has been tremendously atrophied. I think we hadn't updated our work page. You know, we do the podcast and we talk about what we're working on, but we hadn't actually updated it on our work site since, I don't know, like a year ago, something like that. So we figured we'd sort of primp it up a little bit and, I don't know, stuff like that. You actually wrote a cool module that you're contributing for that, right, Nate?
Oh, right. One of the other new things that we put into the new Lullabot site is we're using a lot more jQuery because after upgrading to Drupal 5, we have that at our disposal. So the search box kind of drops down and does a little bounce. And on the work section, which is you click on the About tab and then go down to Work and then look at any of the work items inside of there. And I made a jQuery-based slideshow that takes a CCK image field and turns it into a slideshow. So uploading, say, you know, 3 or 6 pictures in a multiple image field upload, it just makes a formatter for CCK. And then selecting that formatter, it takes all those images and puts them all into one CCK slideshow that uses jQuery to rotate through the images. Very nice. That's called CCK _ slideshow. It's in the contrib repository right now, and it'll probably be a Drupal project by the time you guys listen to this. So you can probably get it, drupal.org/project/CCK_slideshow.
Probably.
Probably. And if you want to demo it out, you can go to the Lullabot site and check it out.
And, I mean, one of the big mantras that we had for creating the new Lullabot site was context. It was basically, we were feeling like a lot of people were coming to our site, we're pretty high Google ranked and stuff like that. And, you know, if they're searching for something about Drupal and we've got an article about it, they'd sort of end up on our site about, you know, on the article for that thing or a podcast for that thing or, you know, if it's on the homepage of Dig. But yet there really wasn't any context. I mean, it was like just that article and not even any links off to like, what is Lullabot? Who is Lullabot? What are the other things that are on the site and stuff like that? And so I had a module called, similar terms, similar by terms. That I had actually written for MTV, and hadn't gotten around to contributing, into the contrib repository, partly because I wasn't sure if it every time I kept thinking about doing that, it looked like there were other modules out there that did the same thing. And I think that there still may be, but heck, you know, we're talking about it on the podcast now, so I'm going to contribute it and people can say, hey, this is just like that thing. But basically what it does is it, has a little, pretty simple kind of algorithm kind of thing where you define a block and say similar terms within this vocabulary, you know, show me similar nodes that are similar. Show me nodes that are similar, given the terms, the categories within a specific vocabulary or within all vocabularies. So all that sounds sort of jargony, but let's talk about how it actually works on our site. How it works on our site is we have a free tagging vocabulary called tags, and we just turn on the block and say, show me things that are similar within the tags vocabulary. So if an article is tagged with CCK views and, I don't know, slideshow or jQuery, it might show other things that have, you know, that have CCK and views, but maybe don't have slideshow, and it shows, you know, in order of what's most similar based on these terms. It's pretty similar, and you have a lot of control over it. I mean, I think that there's some other things out there that have other algorithms where they like look at the entire post and they all this kind of stuff. But this is really, it's pretty lightweight because all the vocabulary terms are stored as numeric values in the database. So it's a really quick sort of numeric based lookup kind of thing and stuff like that. And that's what's providing these similar similar stuff block. If you go to one of our
or see also as its headline.
Oh, is that what it's called? Okay, so see also. At one point, I called it similar stuff. See also. Yes, that's much more legitimate, isn't it? I think we took out the word stuff in various places on the site. Yes, Drupal. No one would respect Drupal if instead nodes were called stuff. Anyways,
it's better than crap, but you know.
Yeah, like, well, you know. are we going to need to now tag this podcast as unclean?
Oh no, can I not say that? Sorry.
I don't know. I'm going to still tag it as clean. We'll see. We'll see what iTunes says.
We'll get an angry mother yelling.
Well, you can. You can say that on television. So at least
you can say a lot of stuff on television.
At least you can in Canada where Angie is. So. You can get away with more. So another block that we have enabled is the popular stuff block, which is basically just a view that works with the statistics module to show the stuff that's popular on the site, right? The node pages that are popular. Currently popular. How bizarre.
That's about all I have to say about that.
No, well, I'm just looking at the most popular page on the site right now is one called Podcast, which is basically I've never seen before. I'm actually going to delete it. It's a bizarre page. I have no idea how people got there. This is the podcast page.
Yeah, I remember that page. That page was the placeholder page before you guys had any podcasts.
Yeah, I guess so.
It was December 27, 2005.
It was, in fact, the most popular page on our site right now. Maybe that block isn't working quite right. Anyways, it's a view. Oh, and here's another one that says, this is the articles page. That was now the most popular one after I deleted. Well, anyways, we're still tweaking the site a little bit. okay.
Who uses this buggy CMS anyway?
I don't know. Drupal theming an API. I don't know. Anyways, we're still trying to get it to work right. I don't know. That popular block. I'm still a little dubious. And also, it's like one of these things where the view, should it be ascending or descending by popularity? Is it by the number of, or like the most popular thing is number one, or the most popular thing has 1,000 bazillion hits on it? So anyways, we're still tweaking things. Anyways, the recent block is some funny logic. And so that's just part of our own Lullabot module. I just wrote that sort of from scratch. It's a funny little query that does some funny little things and orients it so that it organizes things by group there. I don't know. What else is cool on the site?
I know something that I really like about the site, and this is going back to the Zengine, but all of the blocks on our site, when you roll over them as an authenticated user, like any of the Lullabots, it pops up links that aren't there normally, but just pop up when you hover over the block that says configure or edit view. Just makes it really easy to know where stuff is coming from, because there's this huge dilemma in Drupal where you want to edit something on the page, and there's the edit tab right there, and you click edit, and nothing in the sidebars are there. And so so it kind of distributes that ability to blocks that previously you only really had with nodes.
Yeah, and that's a thing you get with the Zengine. So the problem with, I guess the problem with talking about Zengine is that there really aren't any Zengine-based themes out there yet. We need to make some Zengine-based themes. Maybe could port some things over to Zengine or something so that people can see what it actually does. A theme engine without any themes is like something without something else. I am not a poet. At least not a poet today. Apparently not. What does recently popular mean? What is recent? I need to figure that out. It's in the past day, in the past week. I don't know. That's bothering me. It's still bothering me. What else? I don't know. I just like there's some like we're using some transparent pings in a couple places on the homepage for the block that's currently promoting Matt's book on the homepage. You can kind of see the clouds through there, and I enjoy that. I think that's
cool. Did anyone test it in IE?
I did. I found a really cool sort of rounded corners scripty kind of thing. Well, not, you know, an example of doing rounded corners out there with CSS, and it's got a little IE hack in there so that they don't get the translucent thing. They just get a regular opaque graphic, so they get an 8-bit ping and not these crazy 24-bit pings that who knows what to do with a 24-bit ping. Oh my god, I can't handle it. I'm from Microsoft.
Hi, Jeff.
I'll tell you, talk to anyone after they've just done the theming for a site, and how much do they would hate be too strong a word, you know,
loathe.
Internet loathe. Just have some, they really wish that Microsoft would please buy them a beer. Because, come on. Why? Really? Why do we need to go through that? We've also got these cute little graphic-y things. Well, I mean, cute, because I find the Lullabots to be very cute, all of them. So basically, you know, the articles now are sort of a more, as I said like before, more of a showcase, more of a kind of like, ta-da, we got something, you know. And so it's got the author picture next to it, and we've got this little thing with, next to the podcast. It's got a little microphone and stuff like that. And we're kind of using some cool stuff with the image cache and
user profile pictures.
Yeah.
The same thing. I wrote an article on it a while back. If you do a search for image cache on the Lullabot site, then the first tip there is an image cache example, user profile pictures. And we're doing the exact thing on our site now, where we upload a huge user profile picture, something like 800 by 600 or larger. And then using image cache, we then scale down that huge image to whatever size we want in various different places throughout the site. Like in articles, we use that small little thumbnail that's an image cache, like 60 by 60 square. But then if you like click on that person and go to their bio page, then you get this nice, looks like 125 pixel square, which is a different image cache preset. That it's just a really useful method for making sure that all of your user profile pictures are all consistent throughout the site. Like the normal Drupal way is you upload a picture, but it scales it down, and then that's the only profile picture you have, which is like by default an 85 pixels, sometimes square, sometimes rectangle picture. But instead, uploading a huge image and then cropping it however you like, basically keeping the original intact and then modifying it everywhere you need to display, you can get really nice, consistent, various sized thumbnails of user pictures throughout the site.
Yeah, it's cool. I mean, we're really big fans of the image cache. It's really cool stuff. It's once you get the hang of how it works, it's obviously really powerful. There's some cool stuff on the horizon for that. Did any of that stuff sort of get into Drupal 6, Nate?
Well, one thing that definitely got in was Daryl Opry. He's the original author of both Image Field and Image Cache. And one of the long-standing pet peeves that both of us had about Drupal was the permissions on files. Like, files were associated with a node. A file could only belong to a node, and that was it. And so he got in a total overhaul of the file system that makes it so files are owned by users rather than nodes. So a file can be owned by several different nodes. And also that'll be like the gateway to like a file browser like IMCE that actually has Drupal integrated permissions.
Yeah, we just discovered that module and we're using that on the site now. I like that. IMCE, I guess, started as an image manager kind of a thing that worked with TinyMCE, and then it eventually sort of morphed off and now it works without TinyMCE. So mm-hmm. even if you're not using the TinyMCE WYSIWYG module on your site, it's a really cool, just sort of a like a kind of a, I don't know, lightweight file manager? Is that what you...
Yeah, totally. I mean, and it works with regular text fields. It works with TinyMCE. It works with FCK editor. And it also works with another editor that author wrote, the name of which eludes me, but is also really good. I think it's called BU editor.
Hmm.
That's kind of like a lightweight kind of like Wikipedia kind of style editor, where it just gives you like four buttons across the top.
Oh, right. And the cool thing about the IMCE module is that, so you don't have the overhead of associating images with a node. They're just basically you upload them into a file directory associated with your user.
Right.
And then you can do some managing of those files. I think you can delete them and stuff like that from within there, maybe. But I don't know if you can. But you can definitely, like, you know, link to the same image from several articles or from several, you know, nodes. And you can also, you know, upload really quickly into an article that you're writing, and it'll automatically insert stuff like the size of the image and all that kind of stuff. I mean, historically, we've been just using the upload module, and then you have to copy the URL of the image that you just uploaded and then paste it in and put it in an image tag. And then, you know, and then usually we don't even put the image sizes of it, you know, it's just let the browser figure it out and stuff like that. So this is pretty cool. I that was a new discovery. It'd been sort of in my peripheral vision, but I hadn't really tested it out. But IMCE, I like it.
Mm-hmm. And so getting back to Drupal 6 and how like image cache, image field will get better that the segue that we got on is that once there's information in the database about files, no matter where they're coming from. Like right now, upload module puts stuff in the database, but say IMCE does not. It'll be much easier for anything to use the files table to store information. So like, it's likely image field uses the files table, but IMCE will be much easier to use the files table. And so, everything in Drupal will be able to find information about files in the database rather than just reading them from disk. And so that'll make any IMCE much easier to integrate with just about everything. it'll just make file management in Drupal much more central. So image field and image cache and IMCE can all share the same information rather than kind of needing to read files from disk or their own tables or whatever they're doing.
Yeah, the reading them from disk can be a problem. we had set up so I think to some extent IMCE was sort of an attempt to replicate replace the TinyMCE image manager, right? The people at Moxie Code who write TinyMCE, which is an open source WYSIWYG editor for the web, and there's a TinyMCE module to integrate it into Drupal. The people at Moxie Code, they make two commercial products, a file manager and an image manager, and they're, what, like €40 for the entire MTV Europe site. So not, you know, not really a problem. However, with MTV or other people that were using it, you know, they oftentimes will have these huge image libraries, you know, I mean, just like thousands and thousands of images. And to open it up and add an image and it goes through and parses through all of these images on disk, it's kind of problematic. It's not as quick as saying, give me the first 20 or the ones matching this criteria from the database or something, as opposed to having to sort of parse through all of them and get all their information off disk can be inefficient when you start to get into large numbers. Works for small numbers, but large numbers. Blech, blech. That's what I have to say about that. Blech. Any other bits and pieces? I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know, we didn't make any really like major changes to the Lullabot site. Mostly we were just kind of tweaking it out, cleaning it up. It was a chance to update modules. We installed the update status module, and switched around. We used to be checking things out of CVS, and now we just download them, which actually works better with the update status module.
The update status module is pretty cool. Well, in the old days, you know, a year ago.
I remember 3 months ago.
But, yeah, the old days, before the new release system that Derek Wright put in there, you know, it was like that was really the only way to keep your site up to date. You checked everything out from CVS and you did a CVS up. And then that would recursively just grab everything from CVS and with whatever's the newest, which is very convenient, but also very scary because you have no idea what you're getting when you do that. I mean, somebody could have committed a parse error to their module, and then as soon as you update your site, it says fatal error, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, ah, so anyway. So the new release system allows module authors to create stable versions of their, you know, other modules, just like you can, like when you download Drupal 4.7.6, it's always the same files. It's not like it changes from day to day. If it didn't cause a parse error on Monday, it's not going to cause a parse error Tuesday. So you couldn't be sure of that with CVS. So we've moved to this new way of downloading tarballs that are stable releases now. An update status module will scan through those on a cron job and tell you if there's newer stable releases of modules than what you're using. So it's convenient because you don't have, you know, the big reason why you didn't want to have to do this individual tarball stuff is just tedious to go to every single module you're using on your site and check them. So update status makes it really convenient because it does that for you automatically and you don't need to worry about it until it kind of pops up a flag and says, oh, you know, such and such a module needs to be, you know, upgraded and stuff like that. Yeah. A new version of update status that's going into core, hopefully, is offers support for things like, you know, whether or not something was flagged as a security release and if there's a 2.x version of the module that's in development, you know, it notifies you of that as well, just like an FYI kind of thing. So it's really cool.
Cool. Sort of pinging the mothership and getting the information. That's really neat.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I don't know that I have much more to say about the site. I mean, I think, so we've got a little more room. We're going to put a few more things in the navigation over time. Got some things up our sleeve, and that kind of thing. So that's the new Lullabot site. And I think I'm pretty happy with it. I especially happy with the bouncy search box. Boing, 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 boing,
boing, boing, boing, it's boing, hours of fun. If you position your mouse just right, it goes doing.
I can't
doing,
stop
doing.
Playing with it. Yeah. It's like a little. It's like one of those executive desk toys right there on your website. The little bouncing balls, like a boink, boink, boink. Anyways, that shouldn't be the highlight of the site, but you know it does other things too.
But check it out. Bouncy search box.
Check it out. Cool. All right. If anyone, you know, if you have comments on the things that we're saying on this, please comment on the podcast. It's a great place if you want to hear comments. Also, links to usually, people come and they post the comments of the links. We have the Ahrefs guy who comes through every so often and just posts links to everything we've talked about. It's awesome. And sometimes we'll get the energy to post links ourselves, but usually we don't. And also, questions for the podcast, 877-LULLABOT. Call toll-free in the United States and Canada. That's 877-LULLABOT. You could dial 877-585-5226 through Skype at a +1 877-55. What was the URL? Drupal.org
/patch/spotlight.
+1 877-585-5226. Call with questions, and we'll do a podcast where we answer some questions, and we love doing that. Gives us something to talk about, and we'll catch you next time on the podcast. Take care. Bye bye.
Bye guys.
Bye guys.
There might be girls listening too.
Crap. Hi, peeps.
Well, it'd be pretty funny if we said bye, ladies.
This one goes out to the ladies.